Rocking chair sessions. With Elisa Di Battista, Maria Teresa Barber. Hello, everyone.
And welcome to another RCS Rocking Chair Sessions, volume 139 with artist Clara Varas. Welcome, Clara.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for stopping by on a Monday evening, which is when we normally record. How was traffic for you today?
Not too bad.
Hit you got here.
Spots here and there, but
Before I did. You know, I'm driving from Sweetwater. What area are you located in?
Oh, no, I'm right around here, right around the Alapata area.
Oh, nice. So you're nearby in the vicinity. Yeah. How long have you been living in Alapata?
I've been around Alapata. Actually, my studio is there in Alapata. I've been around, three and a half, four years, maybe.
Cool. In the area. Yeah. Where did you necessarily have your studio before hosting it here in Alapata?
Well, I've usually worked in my home a lot.
Like home studio.
Worked in my home, sometimes, you know, like a one-bedroom apartment, which is, like, not easy, but, you know. But it works in terms of, like, you get home and you can just, you know, grab something and start working.
When inspiration strikes versus having to wait the next day. Ugh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, or right before, you go down for the night, at least, you know, give it one last look or something, and that's it, you know.
Did you ever wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, oh, I got inspiration, I gotta do something before I forget? Or,
oh yeah, that happens a lot of times. That's usually when I mess it up, I do that. I decide I have in the middle of the night some weird thing I want to do, and then, you know, it's like, it's good, and then you're like, you know, I want to do something else to it. No, I shouldn't. No, yeah, you should. So you get up, you do it, then you decide the next day, oh, look, it's crap.
Oh, no.
So that happens a lot.
The too much gene that you take it a little bit too far. Yeah, that happens sometimes too, doesn't it? That you're I should have left it. As a painter, isn't that like a little bit more difficult to like retrace and go back? Or
yeah, always. It's always. There is... because a lot of the work is intuitive, so there is kind of like no going back, you know. It's not, I usually don't work from sketches or anything like that, so there's really no plan, you know. And so once you go forward, it's forward, or, you know, that's it, just forward, you know. The sketchbook is the painting, so yeah.
And I feel especially like with the cutting, like you do a lot of cutting too, right? The cutting of the canvas. I feel like that's always like what is the hardest for me? Like, do I cut or do I not cut? Because the rest.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It's like if you cut it, then you'd realize that was wrong. But you cut into like a painting or something, right? Then it's like.
Yeah, that's the worst.
But it's over, right?
And it's over. Like, yeah. And sometimes you have people asking for a work they might have seen on, you know, your Instagram or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, that doesn't exist anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Like, knowing when to stop is one of the things as artists that, you know, it's just one of those things. And I try to decide whether it's a matter of taste or whether it's a matter of... just a feeling, and is that feeling rooted in taste? Well, you know, what is it? What is that thing? You know, and then usually you go beyond that thing that tells you when to stop, and that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah.
And then you gotta back up, or like I usually cut up something, paste it on top, and just keep working and reworking. So everything's a matter of making and destroying and cleaning up. Mm-hmm. So that's... I think that's the happy little merry-go-round. Making, cleaning, destroying, making, cleaning, you know.
Yeah, and finding the balance in it,
and
right? That's like
balance.
I
think you hit the nail on the head. That's the word right there, the balance.
Yeah.
You know.
Because, and sometimes I also feel like... I also have this problem with, like, when do I leave it? That's why I have to have the studio outside my house, because I would do that all the time, I think.
Yeah.
I would just destroy things in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And it's, like, it's like easier for me when I can just, like, when I get this feeling and I'm like, you have to get out of your studio now, just leave, you know, and then I'm like gone, and then, you know, it's kind of like a little bit easier. But I think you need to have a lot of control to just stop yourself when you're right there, right? Yeah. It's kind of like a hard,
It's very hard. Mm-hmm. And some people are naturally more geared towards leaving a lot of space, you know, the whole less is more thing.
Yeah.
And then some people are more is more, you know. So I kind of try to play around with it, you know, see where this certain work wants to go and where does it want to end, because everything is so based on material, and a lot of the times the material just kind of tells you, okay, this is it, stop.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
stop. It fights you otherwise.
It fights you. Mm-hmm. And when it kicks, you know, when it kicks your ass, it's
it
the
wins.
Worst.
No, yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's the most horrible feeling when you know, and you know in your gut when something's just not right.
Mm-hmm. When you failed like 3 times and you're like, okay, maybe I'll like, give up now.
Shit, I crapped it up. You know?
Maybe I'll go cry in a corner and come back later. And
oh my gosh, that horrible feeling.
You said before you're working intuitively, is that like also like imagine a very emotional kind of dialogue with the piece, you know, when you're cutting or when you're like deciding to how to rearrange it or to reshape it, or how would you describe your process?
Or is it more psychological, like in your head? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot of that, but for me the process is a lot based on composition. Mm-hmm. And I sort of get into this, you know, I think everyone does in a way. You get into this trance where you're not really thinking anything and you're just responding to a mark or responding to what's there. And just playing around with the composition and what you want to say, what you, you know, want to omit, what you want to include. So I think it's that space between the hand and the brain, you know, where something just takes over, something that you don't really know what it is or how to name, that just takes over and just guides you, whether it's the material or a composition. So mm-hmm. it's a weird thing. It's hard to describe, I gotta say. It's a hard thing to describe.
It reminds me a little bit at SFEI. I took like this one class that really shaped my work a lot. It was by Liam Everett, and he called it painting between action and idea. And I feel like that is what you described right now, right?
Exactly.
This idea between action and idea, and where they are kind of coming together. And that's kind of like where I see your work as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Mm-hmm.
Do you listen to music while you're working?
Boy, I've had that question a lot, and I've tried to like, I guess I should say I listen to music because, you know, that's cool, but I don't. I don't like listening to anything.
I was about to say, normally when I'm like setting up or cleaning up, I'll play the music and I'll blast it, but if I really want to focus, everything has to be off.
Yeah. The sound that materials make is important to me. I like the sound of the scratchiness of, you know, paintbrush hitting like that rock canvas, or when you're ripping something, I like those things. Maybe sometimes I'll turn on like the TV, and it's probably in another room, like I'm not even looking at it, just to have a background noise. And maybe, I do listen to some podcasts, not to like, you know, podcasts here and there, but
background
I would say
noise,
the majority of the time, it's gotta be nothing. I gotta hear, like I love hearing, you know, because a lot of it is kind of teeter-tottering between like standing, like when I'm working on something that is sculptural, mm-hmm. it's teeter-tottering between standing and not standing. So like, I like hearing when like the metal falls over and, you know, when things rip and, you know, and a lot of times it's in another room. So like, did you hear that? Yeah, that fell. Let me go over there, you know.
The surroundings, you have to be aware.
Yeah.
I like the
But I'm I think it's interesting that you asked that, because I'm not sure you've ever asked that question before.
I haven't.
But you were talking about composition, and there is something that is
musical,
like, that is musical in your work. I feel like it's a lot about, like, also harmony or disharmony or like this, like you say, you talked about construction and deconstruction. There is something very musical in your work. Yeah.
I think,
the rhythm of it, or the
Well, I think, though I'm not hearing music, a lot of times I do take things from music, like titles or lyrics, or I'm thinking of something like that, or I'm thinking of this like sort of mishmash between like you know, Cuban music, or you know, it could be anything, you know, kind of like this world between Spanish and English and Spanglish and you know, who knows what, you know, but I do take from some literature, and I do just kind of just like while you're working, just something kind of just enters the whole thought process, a song or a lyric, or you know, I think a lot of artists do that, you know.
Yeah, I haven't used I know artists who use like musical also the titles, or like, you know, as an inspiration. I recently stumbled upon a poem that I was like, oh, okay, that's like, that's interesting, that you know, fits. And that was like funny, because it was like a month ago, there was like this poem share. You know how you used to do it? Like you get an email with like a poem, and then you have to share a poem, and then it's kind of like this.
It sounds like spam.
Like, what? No.
If but you don't do this, three people that you know will those fail miserably at life.
And it used to be, when I grew up, it was letters, right? You would copy them or something. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember
it was like
that.
Growing up in the 80s, that was something. And so I was like, oh, this is
like
kind
a
of
chain
cool.
Letter, yeah.
And I got this chain letter, and I got this poem back, and it was just like, oh, it was the most amazing thing. And it just fit like with what I was working on. So I was like,
you gotta put those in the trash bin.
Oh my God. I know. You might have a book and not even know it. You might not even know. Yeah. You might have all your personal information right now from that chain letter.
I thought it was so great. No, but he was a person I knew who wrote me the email.
That's so funny. Clara, I wanted to ask you, what was it, I guess, that attracted you initially to painting? Like, were there any other materials or, like, art forms that you were interested in growing up?
Yeah, I think for me it was freedom. To kind of play between different genres, or between, you know, I think it all started back in when I was going to art school, and you know, painting came the most natural, but also I was looking for something that I wouldn't have to like kind of like not really declare, not call myself a sculptor, you know, or anything like that, because I'm like, oh, sculptor, that's just too, like, you know.
Serious.
I look at sculpture through, like, a very painterly eye, you know, so I'm like, you know, I think, what is painting these days? So, like, what is painting, really? So I think that kind of allowed me the most freedom to kind of get away with things that, you know, you wouldn't be able to get away with if you were, like, you know, in the sculpture department, where, you know, everything is very serious. And, you know, I mean, because I would go into the sculpture department, and, you know, we all had to take sculpture and part of the foundation thing. And boy, I mean, I was like, okay, you know, these guys here are really serious. You know,
like, with you know, their saws and their, like,
oh, yeah. I don't want to call myself a sculptor.
Thing worker thingies.
Like, a painter. Yeah, that allows me to, you know, play around with it. And I think a lot of other people kind of had the same sort of experience, but in reverse. You know, they thought, well, that's sculpture, you know, I can do anything with it. But I think when I say painting, I think of painting in the expanded sense, or the expansion of painting. I started thinking of painting, you know, the expansion of painting into a room, into installation. Mm-hmm. So it's a very broad definition for me.
Not confined to the canvas.
Right, not confined. I do a lot of unstretched work, so I would say that's the last thing I think of. Although I also incorporate some stretched pieces, but yeah.
But you also use, like, even the stretchers, you would use, like, also a sculptural element, like you would show the stretchers, or, you know.
And I show the stretcher. I kind of show the underbelly of painting, mm-hmm. in a way. I like showing the stretcher and the staples and the glue and, you know, the dog hair. It's the cat's hair.
There's nothing to hide.
You know, like the dirt. And so I play around with all those things. And all that is... kind of just became part of it. And I think, you know, now a lot of people are doing work that is, you know, painting in the expanded sense, you know, like, I mean, there's great influences to look at, like.
Yeah, I was gonna say, who were your favorites through school?
Boy, I mean, there's just so many. There's Jessica Stockholder, Judy Pfaff, now, I mean, Helen Martin. There's a wonderful artist doing, you know, incredible expanded things. Field of painting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the interest that painting always had for me. I felt like I could do anything. And it wasn't bound by gravity, which is very important for me because, you know, I come up with all sorts of, like, you know, concoctions that I think a lot of... my sculptor friends and would look at me, it's like, yeah, that's not gonna hold up, man, I don't know, you know. And I'm like, oh well,
that's how I talk to me. I'm like, are you sure you're gonna finish that in half an hour?
Yeah, it's kind of like how I built my and it gets scarier, and I felt like that too. The heavier materials you use, the scarier it gets, because you feel like, okay, if you continue to build like this, you're gonna kill someone with your sculpture, you know. As long as you use like stretcher bars, or I went back to stretcher bars and canvas just for the reason that I don't want it to be too heavy for when it falls, you know.
Artistic weapons.
Once it goes in that direction and you start and you think like that, you can't hone that.
You can't have fun
anymore. You can't put it back in the box. You know what I mean? You just can't. Once it's out, you know? And it's like between balance and imbalance.
Yeah.
You know? And but once it's out, it's out. Once your work takes you in a certain direction, you can't fight it. Because you won't be happy. Like, I'm never happy. When I fight it like that, it's like, okay, I'm going to try. Like... I think my partner, roommate, G, always laughs at me because I always tell her, like, no, what I really want to do now is I really just want to do some paintings. You know, I just want to do something on a stretcher. I am just so sick of fighting gravity, like, you know, and thinking, you know, just a nice painting. And I love when I see a great painting, I'm just like, oh, man, you know, I want to. And then she laughs because I start, like, trying to do, like, you know, painting in a more traditional sense with stretchers and everything, you know. Okay, let me just confine myself to this. And it never, ever works.
And then
it's never worked out. It's like, I can't put it back in the box, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's also like, at some point, I just don't feel like it's my artwork if it's too neat, you know? If it's like a nice painting on stretchers, it's like, yeah, that doesn't feel like me at all. You know,
the best thing I got told in a critique was, you know, you do everything backwards, but it works. I was like, oh my God.
What a backhanded compliment. That's so
funny.
That's
the best critique ever.
I like that.
Oh my goodness.
You know, you're doing everything backwards. But it works.
But it works. So just keep doing it.
Just keep doing, it backwards. It. That's what I say, you know, half-ass, ass backwards. That's, you know, that's what I do.
You went to school in New York, right? Is that true?
Yes, yes.
To the SVA,
School of Visual Arts. Yeah.
How was that experience for you? And also, like, how, you know, how did you get there?
Well, I got there through the public school system.
Cool.
So, you know, shout out to the public school system. I went to, how was it? Can you imagine, like a Latina, like, from Cuba to here, you know? And it's like, you're going to New York City. Nobody else is going to New York City at this house.
Oh, my goodness, your parents were fighting.
But, you know.
Such a great opportunity.
But, yeah, it's I started out with art, you know, just regular art in the public school.
And you went to school here in Miami, right?
Yeah, in Miami. Mm-hmm. I got here from Cuba. I was around 7 years old. And so just started school here. And I didn't know I could draw or paint. I knew I was interested because I would always do some little things with, you know, tinfoil figures in Cuba. The only thing I could get my hands on is like tinfoil, you know. And so I always knew I was interested in something like that. But it wasn't until I had the encouragement of a lot of just teachers that, you know, just to keep me quiet. I was like, I wasn't good at anything else. I was horrible at school.
Oh, no.
So, you know, encouraged me to, you know, do work. And then when I got to high school, had an AP program.
Okay, great.
And that's where I got, you know, the whole portfolio day, the whole thing. The schools would come down here. I went to Coral Gables High School.
Oh, nice.
And
home of the, is it like Spartans or Cavaliers? It's like
Cavaliers.
Cavaliers. Yeah. Color red? Red and gray. Yes.
Yeah, red and gray. I still remember that. I'm surprised I even remember it.
Yeah, that's great.
Red and gray. And that's how I did it, you know. And it was me and another friend of mine, Gerardo Gonzalez Quevedo. So. And
so you had another friend who went with you?
Yeah, we both went up there. He might be familiar to a lot of people down here. He has a little G Clay place that he works with a lot of artists. He's also an amazing artist himself.
Cool.
And so we both went up there, you know, the two Cubanitos up there in New York. I'm like, oh my God, what if we get paints here, man? You know, because it's like funny because you're in this, trapped in this world between the Spanish and English, and you know, my parents' English is much better now, but you know, wasn't all that. So speak English in the house, and you eat like, you know, arroz con frijoles, or rice
usual.
And beans, and then you go to New York, you're like, oh, you know,
pizza and burgers.
It's an experience, you know,
it's a whole different world.
In college, art school, I think, for me, it was good. I think it all depends, you know. Everyone has a different experience.
True.
Up there, but or in art school in general, but I think some people, SVA wasn't like, you had a foundation year where you were introduced to a lot of different, you know, you have your foundation here, you have photography, you have everything else. And then they just kind of let you go. And it worked for some people, and for some it didn't. For me, it was good because, you know, I hated structure. You know, I just wanted to, like, you know.
Be free.
You know, be free, basically. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and I feel like also, like, this pick what you need for yourself, but you can kind of, like, find your own voice.
Yeah.
And some people, it's true, some people need more structure. They need to be guided a little bit more, maybe, or need, you know, a little bit more of, I don't know.
People don't know what they want all the time. Sometimes you have a vision and you have a clear, like, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to learn. And then some people are like, I'm not sure.
Well, I think it's all depends on how you work. You know, some people have a very painterly, mark-making way of working, and some people do, like, you know, they use X-Acto knife a lot and something a little more structured. So it all depends, you know. The good thing about it was that you could do what you wanted. And teachers, the professors I had were pretty objective into helping me do me, mm-hmm. you know, and helping that person do that person. And
that's lovely, not to like force you all into the same
right.
I think that the one thing that I hate the most about art education is when a teacher makes activities where every single artwork looks like the same, you know. It's like, I mean, every kid still has like their, but it like there are teachers that make that want to make it look the same, and then like, I'm a teacher where I want every single thing to look so different that no one even thinks that it was the same assignment. You know,
right,
it was kind of like, I'm like, I don't know. I feel like very passionate about that every kid can like express themselves. However, for some kids, it's harder than for others.
Hard.
I even see it in the better graders. Like for some kids, I feel like if they don't have like
an
visual
example.
Input or something, they don't, they, you know, they get too scared
blank.
Or they are like, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
But I don't know. I feel so strongly about it that I feel like the kids know that already and they kind of like just go for it because I'm also like you can really do whatever you want to do. It's like you were saying, you know, but
and you never know. You never know what that person is gonna find.
Totally.
You know, by moving in all these different directions. You never know.
Yeah.
Where someone's gonna, you know, where their work is gonna end up or where it's like sometimes you see something and you're like, oh, I don't know, but you let them go and they're like, oh, you know, know, that works. That's interesting.
Or sometimes you decide to automatically, like you say, you're like, I'm going to give you free rein, do whatever you want. And then you have those that are like struggling and you're like, well, I have this example. If you want, you could imitate this example.
A little
example,
push,
and then,
yeah, I mean, or a little question, you know, or a little,
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if they're eating paste, well, most likely you want to,
I've definitely seen that.
Probably, like, did you have, was it good? No? Okay, well, now you know, don't eat paste again. Okay. But yeah, like, that would be the one instance to be like, it's probably not a good idea if you eat the paste.
Don't do it anymore. How long were you at in New York for after SBA?
Let's see. I was there for around, like, almost 8 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So 4 years in school?
No, actually, counting the 4 years in school. So
and
I would guess
four more years.
4 more years.
Three and a half to 4 more years more. Yeah.
How was that experience right after school? Like,
oh, my gosh.
In New York and, like
getting out.
Like, I mean, it was probably a little cheaper than it's now, but still.
It was like, you know, you're thrust into the real world and, like, the last thing you did was art, you know? I had a lot of interesting jobs. I mean, let's see. I worked at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Nice.
I said, well, actually, I wound up working at the Pearls up there on Canal Street, which is
cool.
Totally gone.
No, I missed that place. It was so great.
Everyone always has all these memories about it. Like,
so cool.
But yeah, that was fun. It was a fun time. You know, it was a fun time back in the 90s and the latter part of the 90s.
Did you have time to eventually find a small studio space, or is that like when you did have home studio, have artwork studio?
No, we were at, like, G and I were like, we're in an apartment and, like, you know, just working the apartment. So it's always been a part of me, I think, that, and eventually that home environment kind of just like made its way into the work, you know, where I used a lot of like home items and things like that. So I kind of just naturally used it or made it a part of the work, you know.
Yeah, I saw that also on your website. You described that also in your statement, and also that was like a sauce pourer. How do you call that? A sauce pourer.
A
porcelain. Porcelain.
Gravy boat?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
the gravy boat?
A sauce pourer.
Yeah.
That's like the, you know.
There you go.
Scientific term.
Sauce pourer.
I like that. Very European.
Very European.
Just whatever, you know, whatever.
But I thought, I was really drawn to that gravy pourer.
Yeah, that might make an appearance sometimes.
Yeah, because it was so elegant, and it was like, you know, I was like, wow, this is kind of like a, you know, I don't know why I thought he was so elegant. I thought he was kind of like a very royal dinner or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's probably, I think that might be one that my mother picked out, because a lot of the pieces are collaborations with, you know, my mom had this thing where she loved to go to the, you know, the thrift store over here on the 22nd.
Damn.
And, like, you know, going, like, hey, I got something. And she, like, picked
she
up all this stuff.
She enables you. It's so funny.
Oh, my God. Totally. We're both enablers. And, like, and it's fun. It was funny because I was always interested in what she'd pick out. And what she would pick out is not necessarily anything valuable or anything like that, but I always kind of drew the you know,
the,
like,
tchotchkes, the little things out of your house.
And I think in a way these objects kind of had some semblance to her, some meaning to her, of things that were similar to what she might have had in Cuba. Or so it kind of started for me, this whole nostalgic memory you know, thing in my work where I was making these distinctions between, you know, what is home and what is a homeland when, you know, when you're a refugee. And so, you know, it became very interesting to see what she'd pick out. And I never tell her, no, dude, get this, this, and, you know, she'd just like show up with all these things. And it became a way to kind of, you know, talk about the similarities between the generations of, you know, my parents having lived most of their lives in Cuba, and me who had like an early childhood in Cuba. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother, when we first got here from Cuba, my grandmother was with us. And so it became, the objects became this history, this tie to homeland, and why was my mother picking this object and what did it mean to me with seeing it through her eyes. And mm-hmm. also became a thing about gender. But my mom was drawn to these, you know, like saucer that's on the gravy boat, and she wanted to have these, like, oh, you know, this classy, you know, gravy boat, which things that she could never have, really, you know. And I also incorporate a lot of industrial objects. My father is a carpenter.
Oh, neat.
So
building things, working with your hands.
Yeah, mm-hmm. looking at these things that are traditionally carry a gender with them, you know, like his old leaves from the miter saw, and, you know, certain objects that he would leave around, or, like, you know, fix something and, you know, leave it around. And so it just became a way to incorporate, mm-hmm. you know, what is the home and the concept of home, the concept of landscape, still life and landscape, but seen through, you know, the, you know, someone who's been displaced, who's a refugee.
Yeah, and I feel like one of the hardest things of being a refugee is also that you have to leave so much behind, right? You don't just leave the land behind, but also like all your belongings and the things you cared about and the people you cared about and everything, basically.
It's like it's kind of like trying to put together this very sketchy history, personal history, for me and you know, a lot of families that have had that experience, because especially leaving as a younger person, you don't really remember. It's kind of like this weird movie reel, mm-hmm. where there's like pieces, so you're trying to, like, you know, I'm sort of trying to like piece together a history, whether it's real or imagined, really, you know, because who knows the stories they hear through someone else, how much reality is actually in them, because, you know, stories always change when as the more they're being told. So it became a way to piece together a history, and also being making sort of hybrid work that doesn't really fit a certain genre. And also being a hybrid person myself. So it's kind of all these ties between the life, experience, work. I think it's like that for many artists. Yeah.
Do you ever ask your dad any questions about how to build things?
I ask him stuff all the time. I drive him nuts, and it always seems to be something with attaching.
Yeah.
Brackets, you know, brackets are my life. I'm like, okay, but I want to make it stand up like this. And it's like, it's always like, but why?
But why would you do that?
Do you want to do that? You can't. You can't.
You're like, make it happen. Not why.
I ask him stuff like that all the time. He's like, but why? It just doesn't get why I want to do, you know, I want to make it stand on end like that. And even, but why can't you do it this way? This way it's easier.
The normal way.
Keep standing up and it won't fall on someone's head. But I'm like, but I don't want it that way. I want it to, you know.
So funny. I was curious about that.
I'm nuts, you know. Now, you know. You know, less so, but
years later, has he embraced it, or he's still?
Yeah, he's like,
he's still a dad. He's still.
He's still like, oh god, but why? I think the more he sees my work now, he's always like, but you're leaving the painting behind, but you just gotta do paintings. And it's like, but Bobby, they are paintings. They're just paintings in you know, like, they're free of stretchers and everything, but they're, no, but paintings that I can hang in my house, you know, on top of a couch.
Like on a nail. I can hang like on it
on a nail. On a nail, you know.
When you came back home, were they proud of you, of what you accomplished at SVA?
They were, you know, it's a weird thing because, of course, they were proud, you know. Like, later on, I find out that he brags, you know, to his friends and stuff like that, but he would never.
It's so, but not to your face.
Because it was scary, you know. It was scary for.
It was probably scary for them to let you go,
know,
right?
For any parent, and to especially, you know, because of the language and everything, they you know, pretty much down here in Miami, they're confined to here and. You know, and also while you're growing up, I mean, their whole thing is to basically make a living, you know, and there's just not much time. I'm like, all right, what's that? But they're great, you know, and they're both creative, you know. My father likes to, my mom loves to paint now. She's picked
really?
That up.
Really? Yeah. You've rubbed off on her.
I rubbed off on her, and, you know, it's like, it's funny because the first time I sold anything, you know, it was like a little thing, you know. I think they went home that same night and started doing their own drawings. They go, oh, man, you actually sold that?
We can make money like this?
I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's not, I'm like, the whole thing is not about selling it. It's about, you know.
Expression.
But they got all excited about it. And
now she's hooked. That's so funny. Know, does she borrow your brushes or your paint, or you're like, no, mommy, no, sorry. Get away from my paint.
No, she finds stuff. I'm telling you, she found a whole thing of like oil paints there one day, you know, like pretty good ones too, you know. So but they went from being like, oh my God, an artist, to being, you know, very supportive now, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's always
really
good.
Cool. Yeah. And for the last couple of years, you have been working with Anthony Spinello, and
yes.
You've been doing really well. You had a solo show also in his space,
yeah.
In the one that he had in Little Haiti, which was beautiful, which I
right,
saw.
Yeah,
it was just
wonderful.
Such an amazing show.
Yeah.
And how was that for you? Like, how were the years where you were like on
not
your
represented,
own, and
yeah.
Now that you have the gallery, how,
representation? Yeah,
yeah.
It's an interesting thing because, you know, I have to think a little bit about the materials I'm using, and let me just have a little drink here.
Go ahead. A little water. Actually, I'm gonna grab this water too. Do you have a water too? Right.
Water
now?
Break. We're all drinking.
Yeah. So I gotta think a little bit more. I don't have to, because he doesn't really, you know, he's just lets you go. So, which is wonderful about him, but. I myself think, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't be mixing this with that, or
more archival.
It hasn't.
Yeah, so it.
Yeah.
Yeah. In
longevity.
You know, I feel like Elisa is very good about that. If I start working with cardboard, she's like, stop doing that. You can throw that out right now, because that's not gonna last.
It's
because, you know?
I've made that mistake before, and then it's like, oh great, I have to toss it out. And the moment you toss it out, somebody wants it for another exhibit. You're like, great, I have to make this thing again. Then I'll probably have to toss that all over again because it's cardboard. So there's that.
I'm really bad. I always say, well, you know, now the conservationists have, you know.
Yeah, give them a challenge too.
Right. You're creating jobs, future jobs.
It's amazing what conservationists do.
Yeah, they're incredible.
It's funny because you don't think about that when, you know
you're
just making like stuff. I make stuff about, you know, whatever I can get my hands on, so. But when to see that other side of it, you know, because, you know, you see museums and you're like, wow, you know, yeah, okay, let me, maybe I shouldn't be using exactly this cardboard, or maybe I shouldn't be making, using this like enamel paint with like the acrylic here, but, you know, it makes me think about it a little bit more, mm-hmm. Definitely, but it's at a point, it's still fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my whole thing. It's still got to be fun. You still got to, you know, be excited about it. As long as you, if you're doing something, you're excited about it, then it's headed in a good direction. Mm-hmm. It may not be looking like it yet, but but you're excited about it, so that's good. You know, that keeps you going.
I think that's great advice.
Yeah.
You have to like what you're doing.
You gotta be excited about, you know, what you're doing.
What, that's true.
In your own practice, as well as, because that's the reason to keep going.
That's where the magic is, yeah.
That's where the magic is, you know. Once it becomes
tedious or a job, it's like,
it's like, I don't know about, I would think a lot of artists are like that, but I just kind of tune out, you know, and I'm like,
I also saw on your website that you're working on a new show right now. Is that going to be at the museum? Is that a show that you have?
Is that secret?
Tentative? Not yet.
We'll keep it posted.
Well, perhaps, yeah. I think...
TBD.
Yeah, TBD.
Okay.
TBD.
To say TBD. No, we're going to connect your website to
secret,
ours so people
it's
could...
It's secret for now.
People could look at it. I wanted to ask, because growing up here in Miami also as an immigrant, I want to know, you mentioned Coral Gables Senior High. Middle school, did you go to Ponce de Leon?
I did go to Ponce de Leon. I actually went from Booker T to Ponce de Leon to Coral Gables.
Okay.
So it was and by far... One of the best experiences I've had was at Booker T. Washington Middle School. And I don't know if there is a high school still, but because it was so, there was no art, and it makes you think about the lack of art classes and creative outlets in the public schools.
In the school system, yeah.
And it was just some of the best counselors and teachers that, I mean, it was, I think I had to take some sort of elective, so there was nothing. I mean, there was like chorus. That's the only thing I had left.
Like music.
And, oh my gosh.
Are you a singer?
Oh gosh, no, you don't want to hear me sing. And then I was like,
in the car in the shower. That's so funny.
And it was, yeah, not even. And so, but it was, the teachers were really flexible there because, I mean, everyone was just dealing with so much. People were, you know, buying supplies for kids out of the, you know, it's still going on today, you know, for the kids out of their own pocket, you know, the whole deal. And the chorus teacher, and I'll never forget him, Mr. Lester, and he was... he saw that I just, you know, I wanted to paint and I would draw. And he's like, forget this is a chorus class. Just paint. Paint me a treble clef on the wall.
Wow.
And that's the first time I thought about painting, you know, on a wall. You know, on a wall. And the wall can be extended to the floor. So I started kind of thinking like that. And it's amazing that they, that... The professors there, the instructors were able to, there was kids doing, I don't know, there were kids in gym class doing, you know, literature, and they were, and kids in chorus doing art, and mm-hmm. and so it became like that, and it became a very collaborative environment, and everyone was just trying to like make do with what they had. And if they saw a certain child had this sort of interest, let them go in that direction. So it was a very, very interesting and also sad that you know, there weren't any...
Those specific classes weren't being offered.
Yeah, that there was only a couple of those classes, and, you know, I'm sure it's changed a heck of a lot now, and I hope that art remains... you know, a big part of the public school system, music, because it's just so important. And there's so many children that just do horrible in, you know, traditional, you know, like,
regular classes. Yeah,
arithmetic, reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, I would have been lost. I mean, I was like horrible at everything. You know, horrible at everything else. So, yeah.
You were given an outlet, and I think that. that kind of like dynamic that, outlet, that you had, yeah, in that school kind of set you up when you made it set to SBA, and then you already had this ability to like find yourself and pick the things you enjoyed, right, and kind of make your own path.
If that's, I wouldn't have had art in chorus class, I wouldn't have, you know, pursued that. So, you know, you never know when that moment that you find something is going to be. And it could be anywhere, in any place. It could be, you know, where you least expect it, you know. All of a sudden you'll find this path, you know. You know, and then some of us are still searching, you know, well into our, you know, 50s, 40s, you know, but, and that's okay too, you know.
Talking about past, when you're not painting in your studio, what kind of places or activities do you do? Do you feel that feed most going back into your actual process, into your actual space in terms of material or just inspiration?
When I'm in the studio and I'm not doing work, like I'm just sitting there, I think that's an important time. It's, yeah, like I think you're always doing work. Maybe you're doing it in your head, but it's still work, and you're thinking about it, and that's part of the process, you know. And when I'm not there, I'm usually you know, like you know, fishing or something like that. You know, that goes. You know, that also ties into the work, because I use a lot of it is based on the landscape and still life, whether real or imagined. So I don't know. I think everything feeds everything. Sometimes, you know, food, anything. I think. Once you look at things through a certain lens, you kind of tend to... I'm always thinking, well, how can I incorporate this into, you know, or like when I have to do something, like I gotta do work on like when I do like events, the event industry and stuff like that. I'm always thinking about how can I feed this into what I'm doing, that way, you know, kind of kill two birds with one stone sort of thing, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about an artist is really whatever you do is kind of like coming back, yeah, into your work in one way or another, right? And if you learn new skills through another job, or if you,
always,
I don't know, travel, or like it's really whatever you do, it's
just
kind of
keep
coming,
learning.
Yeah,
so
you keep
learning. Yeah.
I used to have a harder time like sitting in my studio and thinking, because I was like, I feel like I've always felt better just making things.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the years, I kind of get a little calmer too, to kind of enjoy when there are the moments where you're just like, you know, in between, yeah, like a series, or you're kind of like just, you know, just figuring things out or reflecting more, or I, yeah, don't know how to just...
It's not easy to, like, you know, just sit there and think. But for me, I got to slow down, mm-hmm, sometimes. So for me, it's a matter of just slowing down. Okay, let me just sit.
Yeah.
Let me just sit, because I do stuff pretty hectically, you know, like, and then, so I think it's important to have that time to, you know, just sit and look at it, mm-hmm, you know, because... kind of like it's a way to try and keep myself from, like, you know, going back to that whole knowing when to stop, you know, try to keep myself from like going too beyond the point where I think
too far
it's good, you know. So
and the looking at the artwork sometimes is really hard too, you know. It's kind of like, I feel like sometimes I'm avoiding that to look really at what I've, yeah, made, you know, because it's like,
right. Yeah, especially with, you know, abstraction.
Yeah.
You know, because it's you don't have that guide, you know. I for the day job, I did a lot of murals, and, you know, it's very representational sort of work. So I always had that guide, like, oh, this needs this and this needs to. But with abstraction, you're just like, you know, that's that point of knowing when that's enough. Or, you know, I try to stop when I think it's still not enough, because that's usually the point where I want to be at. where I think it's not enough, where I think I have to do way more. No, stop now. You know.
Yeah.
or you'll do too much and it'll be done. My last question before we leave is, in terms of palette and the colors you select, are you just like completely, in terms of each series you do, non-discriminate, you like pick whatever you want, or do you feel that you're attracted towards certain kind of schemes in particular, depending on what body of work you're working on?
No, I don't discriminate against it. I'm just
all or nothing.
They're all. I tell you what, a lot of the times it's based on like I run out of a certain color, you know, or I'm too lazy to like that damn tube of oil paint is like so hard
because
I
left the damn cap off. Oh my god!
So I don't want to pour it. I'm like, oh god, my wrist hurts. So okay, I won't use that color.
You use what you have.
So yeah, you use what you have, and
like it is true for the materials too, you know.
Yeah,
you,
and then that color tells you, it kind of just tells you when it wants another color next to it, you know. It's like, no, not that one. Okay, yeah, that one.
I like that, the idea that the material speaks to you, because I feel the same way, that the material speaks to you. And it's like, this is going to work, this is not working, give up, or yeah, maybe add a little bit more of this.
Yeah, you know, I do kind of tend to think in terms of light and dark, like when I have, you know, just juxtaposition of like, you know, like a, like that balance between, okay, I want this like really bright here, or I want this really, you know, darker here, because I want to put this, these dabs that are going to be like these marks that are going to be much brighter here. So I do think like that sometimes, but
the specificity is not really
right. Yeah.
It's more about the light and dark. I like that.
So our very final question is, you've been sitting in a magical rocking chair and it grants you 3 wishes. You can wish for anything and everything, but you have to say it out loud for it to come true. These are the rules of the rocking chair. So what are your 3 wishes going
to
be?
Oh boy, I thought about this one. I knew this one was coming.
You were actually listening until the end. Not a lot of people do.
I have to be honest. So, but and I thought, oh, this and this, but you know, who knows what will come out of my mouth. So let's see. I would say, well, I think the first one would be health and happiness. Mm-hmm. Especially with all this virus thing going on.
Goodness. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier.
And let's see. That we're not the election brings new and better change, and that I don't know, more wishes for everyone, and everybody have their say.
I like
that. Yay, we get wishes too.
More wishes for everyone.
Wishes and dreams coming true for everyone. Thank you for coming to sit with us, Clara. Thank you for the Cuban coffee. I will be having
some.
Thank
you so much. You're
welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to our listeners for stopping by.
Alrighty. We are going to be back soon with episode 140.
And we will be linking up Clara's website to our own, if you're interested in looking her up, seeing what she's been doing in the past with Spinello Projects, as well as the potential future shows she might be doing
new
as well. New announcements, TBD.
All right.
So thank you so much, Clara.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.